We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to our first postseason edition of In the Trenches. We're going to take a look back at this college football season for Michigan, as well as a look ahead. We don't know what the bowl schedule is yet, but as soon as we get that, we'll bring it to you. Lots to get to today here on In the Trenches.
Let's go In the Trenches with John Jansen. The former Wolverines captain and Michigan Sports Hall of Famer will take you inside the locker room with players and coaches.
That's how those guys get scholarships, because after 1 year, here's another, here you go. Keep up with me, John.
I can see the smoke coming out of your ears.
Once again, here's John Jansen.
Welcome back, friends. When you download this podcast, make sure you like, subscribe, and give us some feedback. Let us know what you think we're doing. And in the off season here, send us some comments. You can reach me on Twitter at JohnJansen77, or leave it in the feedback on the podcast. So we know what you'd like to hear in the offseason. We're going to bring you some recruiting information. We'll bring you as much, obviously, as we get to the bowl game, spring football, leading into next football season. A lot to talk about, but if there's something on your mind, let us know. And also, listen up, Wolverines fans. Even Hotels has arrived in Ann Arbor, and here is the inside scoop. Even Hotels has something for everyone. Enjoy organic meals at their restaurant, get the rest you need to accomplish more, or stay active with mounted fitness walls in each room and a best-in-class athletic studio. Not to mention, game day just got a little easier. Even Hotel Ann Arbor is located just a few miles from Michigan Stadium, Chrysler Center, and the rest of the Michigan campus. Book now at evenhotels.com. Even Hotels, where wellness is built in. Want to bring in Brian Bush. And Brian, you know, I know that there's a lot of basketball to cover, but last week, you're the voice, the play-by-play voice of Michigan basketball, and Michigan basketball had two terrific wins. Mm-hmm. And you were there down in the Bahamas. Not going to hate on you too much for that. Your week was watching Michigan basketball and broadcasting two great victories. And then on Saturday, you got to witness your first game in the Big House against Ohio State. Not your first game, but the first game that you had with Ohio State. Yeah. Hell of a week for you.
It was awesome. So first off, we're recording this before the Louisville game. So heck of a – that half-court shot to win by Xavier Simpson to beat Louisville, that was awesome. That's my
prediction. well played.
Pretty awesome.
And I'm going to buy my – what is it? Mega Millions is up to about $300 million.
Correct.
I'll buy that one too.
Lock it in. But as we're recording right now, yeah, Michigan 7-0. And so what happened was Michigan beats Iowa State Wednesday. And I start to think, okay, well, because of this win, Michigan will play the first game Thursday, and they're locked into either the first or the second game on Friday. I think, okay, I have a Saturday flight because we could have played anywhere from, you know, 11:30 until 9 o'clock on that Friday. I'm probably not going to be able to get back for the game. So I look just to see what flights are out there, and there's a 7:20 p.m. flight Friday. And I'm doing the math in my head. Okay, this can work out. We just need to avoid overtime in any of the games, and I should be fine. So, sure enough, the first game on Friday, Oregon, North Carolina. Oregon has a great look at a 3-3, in and out, and ends up going fine. I get to the airport. Power goes out about 10 minutes after I sit at my gate. And, you know, island life's a little different than United States life. So they board us, and they tell us we have to deplane because the air traffic control setup, their generator didn't kick in. So I'm going, man, not only am I not going to stay another night in the Bahamas, but I'm probably not going to make it up for the game either. And sure enough, we get there with about 25, 30 minutes till my connection. I, out of shape, heaving and running across the Miami airport. I get there just in time, out of breath, say, Did I make it? Yes, you did. You're good. It was a whirlwind, but yeah, Michigan basketball, it was a special week last week, no doubt.
What are you seeing before we get into 7 from 77, but just give our listeners a quick update on, you know, Juwan Howard. It's his first coaching job. It's his first year at Michigan. What are you seeing from this team and more specifically from him?
So I think you can perfectly sum up what he has brought to the table in one observation. And it was Thursday against North Carolina. You get to a media timeout, which, you know, that's a 2-minute stretch where the coach gets a chance to draw up the next play or talk through something he didn't like. It's a team thing, and you try to maximize every single second. And just before that media timeout, Franz Wagner, there was something inside. I think it was a box out issue or something defensively that Juwan didn't like from what he saw from his freshman Franz. And he comes out on the floor, and it was as if he's giving him a one-on-one 30-40 second coaching snippet on what he wants to see Franz do again. So instead of drawing up a play, doing something in that media timeout, he A, trusts his assistants to run the rest of that conversation while he gives a one-on-one detail to Franz Wagner. I asked associate head coach Phil Martelli, who obviously has seen a ton of basketball in his day, I said, have you ever seen a head basketball coach do that at the college level? And he just put up a balled up fist. Never. Never seen that. The way that he connects with the players, the way that he understands not only the big picture, but also the impact of that. If your head coach goes out there and doesn't demean you, doesn't yell at you, he just goes out there and talks through something you didn't do right, you think you're going to remember that from now on? Heck yeah. Yeah. You're definitely going to remember that. Just his genuine, intelligent approach to things. He's measured. He's passionate. It's 7 games in. I don't want to be hyperbolic. You can't get, you know, this is still a lot of guys who were from the previous regime. But the way that he has been able to get X, Teske, and Livers to take that next step even beyond what we've seen. And I mean, Eli Brooks is much better than last year. David DeJulius is much better than last year. Colin Castleton's looked really good. Brandon John still has ability. The way that he has gotten these guys to take that next step, pretty much everybody in the rotation, you can't help but be super optimistic about where this team is at. And, you know, the people saying at the start of the year, I don't know if they're going to make the tournament. Long way to go, but boy, that seems short-sighted now.
Well, those are a couple of great resume builders for Juwan Howard. And, you know, when we get to the end of the year and we're talking about, you know, this compared to other teams, I think that'll definitely help. And, you know, that relationship that he has with the players, you know, bringing it back to football, it's a great example, same as Josh Gattis did with Giles Jackson.
Exactly.
On a touchdown pass against Rutgers. You know, it was a touchdown pass, everybody celebrating, but it wasn't exactly the way it was supposed to be done, and it may cost you later in the year. Against Iowa with Nico Collins, you know, coming up just a little bit short in converting a first down, that ability to make those corrections on the spot can only be done, or at least most effectively be done, when you've got a great relationship with the players. Juwan Howard obviously has that right now with his guys. Josh Gattis has it with his guys, and I think that was a huge move for him earlier in the year, as we kind of talk about this year in review, of him coming down, Josh Gattis coming down from the box to the field to continue to develop this offense. And we saw a lot of growth in this offense throughout the course of this football season. And I know we're going to get into it a little bit more today and the rest of this offseason, what to look forward to in regards to the bowl game and next year. But let's get into 7 from 77.
Yeah, let's do it. And number one, John, you know, a lot of the postgame commentary from Saturday has been revolved around the concept that Michigan doesn't have the talent to compete with Ohio State. You said Saturday it's not a talent issue, it's an execution issue. I want you to expound upon that because you're in the minority with that observation.
It is an execution issue because when you look at this game, and I've said this before and I'm going to say it again, when you get a chance to look back at the 60 minutes of football and you look offensively, defensively, special teams, there's always a handful of plays that you can look at and say that is what either won us or lost us the game. And when you look at this game against Ohio State on Saturday, it was a fumble inside the red zone by Shea Patterson. It was offsides on 4th and 4 when they finally forced Ohio State to punt. Both times Ohio State went down and scored. And if you look at the score at halftime, 28-16, what's the difference? That's a huge difference in that game. And, you know, we don't know how it plays out from that point. Everything changes. But you have an opportunity at that time to put points on the board. It's a missed extra point at the beginning of the game. You put a great drive together to start the game off. You take advantage of some mismatches. You get momentum. You are on attack, and then some of that momentum is stolen because you missed that extra point. It's a touchdown pass that is in the hands of a wide receiver that in a game and a matchup and a moment like that has to be caught. Those are some things that you look at. And just so a few examples, the most obvious ones, where our players have the talent to be there. They have the talent to move the ball down the field. Now it's a matter of executing inside the red zone. It's a matter of executing an extra point, a touchdown pass, lining up correctly. All of those things come down to execution. It has nothing to do with talent.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about all from the comfort of your home isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Number two, probably the soundbite that got the most run after Saturday's game was Ohio State quarterback Justin Fields. He said this, quote, "I think we take it more seriously than they do, to be honest, with regards to the rivalry." Your reaction to that comment?
You know, it's his first exposure to this game, and I'll give him a mulligan. But when you're riding high, you got to be real careful on what you say, because this is a game. It is the most important game. It's the only game on Ohio State's schedule. It is the most important game on Michigan's schedule. This one hurts for a year when you lose, and it feels great when to be able to celebrate when you win. And so. To say that just it's coming from a guy that doesn't yet fully understand the implications of this rivalry, how big this game is on a yearly basis. So I may give him a mulligan, but there may be some other individuals that aren't going to be so generous.
Number three, Michigan defensive coordinator Don Brown talks about fixing things. Last 2 years, Ohio State puts up 62 and 56 on the Wolverines. So what, in your eyes, can he do to fix what has been that problem?
Well, some of it's on the defense, obviously creating matchups where you don't have your safety on their fastest receiver. We saw that against Penn State. We saw it happen again, and that's going to happen at times with formations. And that's Ryan Day on one side trying to scheme to get things in their favor. Don Brown has to continue to do that on the defensive side of things to put things in our favor. And, you know, when I talked before the game about offense and defense being complementary to each other, and that I had more confidence going into this game than I had previously. And I couched that with saying it doesn't mean we're going to win. It meant that I felt we were going to play better than we had previously. And if you when I talk about complementary offense and complementary defense, the defense goes out there and gets stops, create things, opportunities for the offense. The offense takes advantage of those opportunities. You get in the red zone, you score. Special teams, you put points on the board when they're supposed to be there. You don't turn the ball over. You don't extend drives for the other team. So it has to be, it's not just on Don Brown. And yeah, there are things on defense that we've got to do in terms of we've got to find a way to slow down Justin Fields so that he does not convert those third down situations when the secondary does a great job of covering people. Now all of a sudden he's got nowhere to throw it. He runs for a first down. You've got to find a way in that matchup to win. In J.K. Dobbins, he's a terrific running back. But you have to be disciplined every play of the game. That's what I talk about when I'm talking about, and I'll go back to that last question, execution. We've got a defensive line that can stop the run. We've seen that. They've proven that throughout the course of the year. We also have guys that are high motor guys. They want to make a play. They want to do things to win for Michigan. And this is where the gap to me is. It's not the talent gap. It's the execution, and it's between the ears. You've got to be disciplined and not say, I want this game so badly that I'm going to try and make every play on the field. Trust the other 10 guys on the field, offensively, defensively, special teams. They are there to help you be successful as well as you are there to help them be successful. So don't get out of your gap. We talked to Carlo Kemp, and he mentioned how important it was to stay in your gap. You know, J.K. Dobbins, the front side, he gets shut down and then, you know, was able to cut the ball back. That is, one, a great player making a play, but it's also a breakdown in terms of assignments and discipline.
Number four on today's 7 from 77. Unfortunately, on Saturday, this year's team not able to channel the upset from 1969, 50 years ago. But it was a special weekend for that 69 team. Tell us about all the festivities. I know you were instrumental in putting it all together.
It was a special weekend, and it was even more special for me because when I love Michigan football, almost as much as anything in this world, and I love the history and tradition, and on a game to game basis and a daily basis, I get to work with two of the guys that were on that football team, Jim Brandstetter and Dan Dierdorf, and those guys, and you know what it's like to be, that's my team now, right? That's the broadcast team. You're a member of that team, and you want the best for those guys, and they're having their 69 reunion, 50 years. From Bo Schembechler's first year, and Bo meant the world to me. Never had a chance to play for him, but I did know him. He was out at practice. I sat in his office, and it's hard not to love all that has happened in Michigan football. So I say all that to lead up to, it was very important for me to be able to get it right so that those guys could enjoy a great weekend. I remember what it was like in 97 for the 97 team to come back for their 20th and how special those moments were. Friday night, they had a dinner at the Young Center between Chrysler and the Big House. And they had an opportunity to, run the game, on the big screen and watch their guys and watch their team tell stories and remember what was happening on the sidelines, what was happening in the lead up to the game, after the game, and remember some of the guys that weren't able to make it. Jim Mandich, their captain, passed away a few years ago. So it's an opportunity to celebrate the moments that they remember of him and celebrate their life. And then on Saturday, they had a tailgate before the game. Probably just a continuation of the party from the night before. They were on the field before the game to be recognized as honorary captains for this 2019 Ohio State-Michigan matchup in the first quarter, which it ended up taking a little bit longer because Michigan put together a scoring drive, so did Ohio State. But the first TV timeout, they were recognized. And there is so much about what we do now and the expectations of these football teams, the expectations that were on me when I was a player from, my redshirt year in 94 all the way through 98, all those expectations were put in place or at least re-upped by what that 69 team did. We are standing on the backs of that team and, to have those guys back, it was just, and to see them, to see him smile, to see how much it meant to them, to see how much Michigan football 50 years later means to them. You know, I'll go back to what Justin Fields said. Don't ever underestimate what this game means to both programs.
And when that next Michigan win comes, that team is going to be remembered very, very well. Hopefully that's in 2020. All right, number five. Obviously still some things to play out during championship week, but for most reports, most projections, it seems like it's either going to be the Holiday Bowl in San Diego against a Pac-12 team or the Gator Bowl in Jacksonville against an SEC team. Do you have one you'd prefer?
I do, you know, and I'll say this by, if you're not playing in the Rose Bowl, that's always the goal. And hopefully when Michigan makes the college football playoffs, that's the opportunity that these kids have. Or you're not playing in the college football playoffs. To me, all of the bowls, while special, are basically the same. Because you're playing against a different conference. You're playing against, you know, it's an opportunity for kids, seniors, to show their last, you know, their last bit of film to NFL scouts. It's young players getting an opportunity to get extra reps at practice, maybe get on the field, especially with the new redshirt rule. We get a chance to see some young players that, you know, maybe only have three games in or less, and, you know, they get a chance to play, and we get a preview of what we're going to look forward to next year. So having said all that, I would much rather – we've been in Florida. We've been in Atlanta. I don't want to go back to Florida. And you know what? I love those bowl games when we were there, and they all did a great job. I want a different scene. I want to go out to California. I would love to be in San Diego for the Holiday Bowl. My freshman year, we went to Holiday Bowl and played against Colorado State. Some of my greatest memories are out there. Plus, that game is played on the 27th. I can have Christmas with my family. Yep. I can do the bowl game. I can be at home and watch all the New Year's Day games, watch the Rose Bowl. To me, as a kid growing up, I become a football fan at that point, right? And you just, tradition and history all come flooding back, and I want to be able to spend that time with my family. If I'm not going to be part of a national championship effort, then you know, I want to be home for the holidays.
It would be a sick joke if we finally avoid Florida in a bowl game and we play in the Gator Bowl. I mean, come on. Like, go from the Gators to the Gator. I'm with you on that. Number six, regardless of what bowl it is, if it's the Holiday, the Gator, something else, how will these next few weeks look for the players and for the staff?
You know, it's going to be a time where this week you're going to be licking your wounds. You're still trying to get over what happened, and you're not going to. I said this in the post game. You won't get over it until you get a chance to play Ohio State next year. And, you know, that game is going to be in Columbus. There's a lot of buildup already in my mind as to, you know, what's going to happen in that game, how it's going to go down, the matchups I'm looking forward to next year. But for this week, it's the players will get some time off. You know, and one of the things that we forget throughout the season, and I try as best I can to remind people and our fans, these are student athletes. The student side has to come out this week, and guys get a chance. If there's anything that they're behind on or they need to get ahead to in regards to the final marking period or the final exams coming up, this is a week for them to be able to, you know, see their teachers, see their TAs, their professors, and get some things straightened away so that they're ready to make a great push to finish the semester hard. They'll get a chance to get in the weight room, you know, heal up any injuries, you know, and starting when we find out, whenever it is that we find out what bowl game that we're going to, then it becomes a matter of preparation for, you know, that team. The beautiful thing about these 15 practices, and this is the benefit that teams that make bowl games have, and there's a few teams in the Big Ten this year, Illinois, Indiana, that are going to be going bowling that haven't. The benefit is during the football season, the first and second teamers, they get all of the important reps. When you get into the bowl game prep, now you have extra time to give those third, fourth, fifth, sixth team guys, whoever it is, extra reps in preparation for this game. You may even be able to get a lot of those guys reps in the game because of, like, the aforementioned redshirt rule that allows them to play in games without losing a year of eligibility. I think it's tremendous. And those guys get a chance to develop. They've had, you know, basically 4 or 5 months now of being on campus, if you're talking about the freshman class, and they've watched film. They've seen the seniors and the juniors go out there and practice. Now it's their time to go out there and show what they've learned and continue to develop so that when they get into spring football, they're ahead of where they possibly could have been.
Lastly, number seven, your coping mechanisms over the last few days were?
Oh.
Yeah.
That's about it. I know. I watched the film, and obviously it never changes. You always hope for a different outcome. But, you know, for me, it's just I the way I cope with is I'm disappointed. And just like a victory, you've got to move on. Because next game, which is the bowl game, next opportunity to get better, you know, bowl practices, spring ball, I start looking at the team that we're going to have in 2019, and I get really excited about that. We've got talent at quarterback, Dylan McCaffrey, Joe Milton. You've got two young running backs in Hassan Haskins and Zach Charbonnet. That excites me. This freshman class that came in of offensive linemen, we're going to lose Ben Bredesen. We'll lose John Runyon, but I'm excited. Michael Onwenu. So we're going to have some new faces up front. I'm excited about what I see from the twos and threes on the offensive line. Ronnie Bell, Mike Sanders still at wide receiver. You know, Nico Collins, and we'll see how many of those receivers end up coming back. But we've got a lot of talent and depth there that has the ability to be here. Defensively, Cam McGrone. I couldn't be more excited about a kid that had an opportunity going into the season. You were hoping maybe in spot duty you'd see him. After the Wisconsin game, he stepped in and played extremely well. His speed, his strength, his we saw him be a little over aggressive on Saturday. We could contain that a little bit, and he learns and he grows as an individual. I think he's going to be a special player for Michigan. Aiden Hutchinson, you know, the defensive line, Mozzie Smith, Chris Hinton, some of those young players that we saw in spot duty. I get really excited about that. In the secondary, you've got, you know, Vincent Gray, young player, really talented. We saw him play this year. Ambry Thomas could not have had a better year with the complications coming into this football season. So that's my coping mechanism is, okay, how do we get better? How do we match up? How do we win a Big Ten championship? Because that starts now.
It sure does. Do you know who John Harris is?
No.
He opened the first bacon factory. He should be your best friend. Back in the county of Wiltshire in 1770, and the Wiltshire cure method of cooking bacon is still used today. It's a sweeter, less salty taste, but thank you, John Harris. You know what? He saw the future. He saw what was going to be important, and that was mass production of bacon.
Yeah, and just as we stand on the backs of that 69 team and Bo Schembechler, we are standing on the backs of some important individuals in the swine industry. Mm. John Harris.
There's got to be a statue of him somewhere, isn't
tip
there?
Tip my cap to you.
It's beautiful.
Thank you.
So he looked to the future. We're going to look to the future here on the podcast with this next interview.
Yeah, we get a chance to talk to Matt Dudek, the director of recruiting here at Michigan, and enjoy what we have to look forward to. And Matt Dudek will do a great job of describing that for us. We're joined now on In the Trenches by recruiting coordinator, director of recruiting, Matt Dudek. Matt, thanks for joining us.
No, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You know, the early signing period is coming up. December 18 is when the majority of recruits will sign, especially, you know, for here. What's the preparation like for you? I want to get into all season long, but from the end of the regular season for the next 2.5 weeks,
yeah.
What's it like for you in regards to phone calls and just making sure that everything goes the way you want it to on the 18th?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of mayhem. And this is, I would say, across college football. It's not just here in Michigan. You finish the regular season. You have 2 weeks of contact starting December 1st. And it depends what the calendar looks like. But this year it was December 1st on Sunday. And coaches can do – it's the first time that coaches can speak to recruits and parents off campus. So that's where you get the home visits and the and you can go to the movies. You can't pay for the kid to go to the movies. You go to the schools and talk to the kids. So it becomes that off-campus contact. So setting up all of those official visits for the 2 weekends, you could have them, making sure getting the information for their NLIs, getting the information they need for their signing day presentations. So it's a lot of on the phone. I'm mainly primarily in the office at this time. I do travel with Coach some of these days, but primarily I am on my phone talking to the 11 coaches from everything about where's my hotel, who else do we offer in this school, what's his coach's phone number, all of those different things going on.
So you mentioned this is the first year they can have contact off campus.
Correct.
How much do the rules shift on a yearly basis? Because 3 years ago, this is the third year we've had this early signing period, correct?
This would be the last year. This is the third year.
The third year.
That's right.
So that changed in of itself, because it used to be the first Wednesday in February.
Correct. Still is. There's still one there.
There's still one there, but yep. A majority of the kids seem to sign at this early time.
Yep.
Now you're able to have contact. I mean, how do you keep up with all the nuances of the rules? Because it's a moving target.
Sure. The compliance office does a great job here. Elizabeth and her team do an incredible job of letting us know. There's usually some new rule proposals that come out in January. Then they vote on them in April, and some go immediately into effect. Some go effect August 1st. Some go effect December 1st. So keeping track of all those things. And sometimes they're the complete opposite of what the rule used to be. Sometimes they're through the AFCA, the Coaches Association. Hey, this rule was written like this. It's not the way it actually happens in real life.
Yeah.
Can you just adapt this one line to change it to this? Here's a great example. Official visits up until, I don't know, it's probably been 5 or 6 years now. You could have an official visitor on campus, a 16, 17, 18-year-old kid. You weren't allowed to pay for his parents to travel. So the kid could come and you could pay for his travel. You could pay for his hotel room. You could pay for his meals. But you weren't able, and once the parents got to the location, you could pay for their room, but you weren't allowed to pay for their plane ticket or their bus ticket or their train ticket or whatever, their car service. You couldn't pay. So kids oftentimes, you know, earlier in my career, they were coming by themselves, making the biggest decision in their lives with their parents not being able to either
because they couldn't afford to come.
They couldn't afford to come. Yeah. Especially because we're booking these things. Sometimes you're booking them 3-4 months out. Rarely. You're often booking them 2 weeks out. So tickets are triple, quadruple the price, and it's Thanksgiving and Christmas season when you're typically doing these things. So it was not a good deal, but adapting that role and saying, hey, we got to have something. We got to have family members here. They're 17-year-old kids making bad decisions, or not making bad decisions, making big decisions.
Big decision, yeah. So how much say do you have with the NCAA? Not that it's, you know, hey, Matt Dudek says this is a great suggestion, they implement it, but
sure.
You as being, you know, at Michigan, leaders and best, yep. You know, the recruiting coordinator at Ohio State, USC, Notre Dame, I got to imagine that there is a voice to be had. How much can you give them your input, I guess is the best way to put it?
Yeah, I think it's grown a lot over the last 5 years. They do a personnel symposium now where all the recruiting guys and operations folks get together like a convention. They do that in August. The Big Ten, we get together, all the recruiting guys, all the operation guys, we get together in April or May, I think it is, for a little talk. We're always talking to our compliance offices, is that's where the rules kind of stem from. And then obviously as they're writing a rule or a proposal and knowing that, hey, Ohio State's good with this, Penn State's good with this, Illinois's good with this, and then we're writing it as a conference as opposed to writing it as Michigan thinks this is best or Penn State thinks this is best. Once you kind of get everybody on board, and it's not a competitive advantage, it's an advantage for the kids, making it mm-hmm. simplified for the coaches or making it simplified for the actual recruits is really where a lot of those stem from.
Without giving away anything, because we're still 2.5 weeks away,
sure.
The basics of this, yeah. and we'll get into how complicated this can be, but how many kids are you able to go and sign for 2020?
So you're allowed. There's a new rule that they added, which is
beautiful,
and it's a different one now. So overall, you get 85 scholarships. That's everybody on your roster, and then there's something called an initial scholarship, which you're allowed to have 25 a year. People were manipulating that in how the rule was written, so they put a new rule in place 3 or 4 years ago now called the hard cap, and that's 25 actual signatures to paper a year. So not like the initial scholarship, who's actually enrolling, 25 actual signatures is actually pen to paper. You can only sign 25 guys. Now, if you didn't use your 25 the year before and you have an initial scholarship to go with it, you could sign 26. There'll be schools in that position to be able to get 27, 28, depending on what you signed in last year's class, what was available. So that's kind of the target of where you're at. And, you know, I think for us, you know, we're somewhere, I'll keep that close to the vest. Yeah. We're somewhere in between that.
No. So, and then also that I'm curious about this, and I know our fans are too. When you have a guy leave early, all right, yeah. 3 years and they leave early, that obviously in theory might open up a scholarship. Also transfers, yeah. Whether they leave or they're coming in. How do you plan for if you're looking at a kid that's in the transfer portal,
yep,
and attracting him, yet not going out and giving away all your scholarships? I mean, how do you manage that number?
You always try to hold back one or two, right? You're never going to turn away a great player, a great mm-hmm. freshman player coming in. But ideally, you always have one in your back pocket, two in your back pocket, that for that transfer, that graduate transfer. Now, they all count the same way. That's where a lot of people make mistakes. Grad transfers and transfers count as a hard cap. They count as an initial scholarship, and they count as an overall scholarship, just like an incoming freshman does. So you do have to prepare for that. And then everybody thinks, okay, well, player X left the team. We have another scholarship. Not necessarily true to give to a freshman. Yes, there could be an overall scholarship available, one of the 85, but those can only be issued to walk-ons that have earned them. The Jordan Glasgow's of the world, the World Hearts, Andrew Vistardis is of the world. That's how those guys get scholarships, because after 1 year, here's another, here you go. Keep up with me, John.
I'm trying.
I can see the smoke coming out of your ears. So those scholarships, after 1 year of being on the team as a non-recruited walk-on, because there's a difference between recruited and non-recruited. Recruited means we official visited you or did something with you during the contact period. Non-recruited means we didn't do those two things. We called you. You could be visit campus, stuff like that. But recruited status means that we official visited you or contacted you during the contact period. So if you're a non-recruited walk-on, after 1 year, you can earn a scholarship if there's one available, and it only counts towards the 85, the hard cap and the initial scholarship nuance go away. A recruited walk-on will always count as a hard cap or initial. So okay. What many people don't do, recruited walk-on. And I, just for those listening, recruited doesn't mean we didn't talk to them or we didn't know them or yeah. They've never been on campus or we don't love them or any of those things. It's just how the rule is written, and it's only they did not take an official visit and we didn't go into have a home visit with you. That target, that makes it turn into a recruited preferred walk-on.
How often do you take your hat off and you just scratch your head going, I have so many lists.
I keep a lot of lists. that's the way you live, right? And it's spreadsheets and lists, and that's with players' names, that's with rules, that's with periods coming up, that's with flights you're setting up for coaches, that's with official visits coming this weekend. You know, all of those different things, and you just work through. And I certainly am not a one person department. I have an incredible staff. Mm-hmm. This stems from Coach Harbaugh. This place is a village. When we have something recruiting, it is all hands on deck. You may be the offensive line analyst or whatever, and your job will be hosting a recruit and his family. And hosting meaning, hey, you're going to move them from the weight room to coach's office for their interview. So everybody gets an individual approach.
And then in regards to building a class.
Sure.
Last year, I know we had, six offensive linemen.
Yeah.
And then you look at this year, or you look in 2 or 3 years, I know that you said it's a village, all right? So yep. It's position groups. It's obviously Coach Harbaugh, you guys work and meet on a daily basis. How do you put together and make it more complicated with who's available in the transfer portal, who is not happy?
Sure.
You know, how do you put together, well, we need X number of linemen, we need X number of receivers, or we need X number of this type of that position?
Right. I think you look at everybody, again, you think, okay, Ben Bredesen is leaving, we better get ourselves a guard. Well, guess what? If you're waiting till Ben Bredesen leaves to get a guard, you're way too late.
Right.
And that's where you've seen that class of six. The year before, there was, I think it was Jalen Mayfield and Ryan Hayes were in that class. So it's eight over 2 years. So now you have a starting, almost a two deep over 2 year period. And then you'll see we're addressing it in this class too, where we'll have three, four. I don't believe we'll get to five guys, but again, you never turn away a great player in this class. So building that two deep in the offensive line. Now, the offensive line, you're talking offensive line because you're a great one. But that's one of the ones that you're always kind of looking to make sure the room's filled. You want to have between 12 and 15 scholarship guys in that room over a five-year period. That's kind of where you'll want to be. Where you build it from, man, you really look at who are your third-year players.
Yeah.
Because those are the guys also that could leave early for the NFL. And then you build from there. Transfers and transfer portal guys, you always count on attrition. I think if you talk to anybody in sure. college football, there's going to be attrition between three and five players every year. A place like this, maybe it's they're graduating and they're going to be a CEO of a company.
Right.
A place like this, maybe they fell on the down on the depth chart and they're looking for a new opportunity or closer to home. And that's, I think that's all really across the country. Some places, that I've worked before, it was that kid's not going to make it through school, and he's not going to be there eligible to play anymore. So, but you usually have about three to five attrition a year.
And the last thing I want to get to in regards to this period leading up to December 18, the National Letter of Intent Day. Last year it was Dax Hill, sure. where, you know, at the end of the season, well, all right, we think we got him. And then all of a sudden we hear reports he's flipped to Alabama. And then, you know, a day or two or the day of, he flicks back to Michigan. One, that's got to make it a nightmare in regards to, well, if we don't get him, we can get this other guy.
Sure.
But we've got to wait, and then he flips back. And, I mean, just take us through that process. And I don't want to use necessarily Dax Hill, but
sure.
that happens between the major programs on a yearly basis.
Yeah, you know, the guys late in the process that change their minds or looking for different opportunities. And the reasons they do that are everything from they're overreacting to another coach from another team, or they see that, oh boy, I thought I was going to step in and that team's better than what we thought. Or, you know, there's the rumors out there of, you know, certain things and certain be given to parents and things like that. And but I'd say that you always have a list, right? So eventually towards the end of your class, and we turn into a best available player situation. We've addressed our minimum needs or whatever term mm-hmm. you want to use for that. And then we're not going to turn away a great player. I guess in Dak's case, there were other players. Was there another safety? Yeah, we had a couple safeties on the back burner, but we wouldn't have turned away Trevor Keegan to get another safety necessarily, because, you know, Trevor Keegan may have a much more higher upside. I say him because he was later in the commitment. He may have a much higher upside at his position than the backup guy you had at the safety position. It happens. You know it happens. And I don't anticipate it happening. No, I think if you talk to every coach and every recruiting guy in America, they will all say, we don't anticipate it happening. Yeah. But guess what? We're also working some guys that have some committed status some other places too. So it works. It works both ways.
Well, I appreciate your time. I know that you've got a few long days, maybe sleepless nights ahead of you. Yeah. But best of luck. And, we'll see what happens on the 18th. Maybe we get an update before we go to our bowl game.
Absolutely. Love to do it. Thanks, John.
Well, thanks, Matt. Appreciate the opportunity to sit down with Matt Dudek and talk to him about what Michigan football has to look forward to and how we continue to build this program into a championship program. But before we sign off today, we've got our fourth and short.
Yep, we do. And number one will be your championship week predictions. Got all the big ones. We start in the Big Ten, Ohio State and Wisconsin. Buckeyes won by 31 in the regular season. Do you see a repeat?
I think this game will be a little bit closer because it'll be at a neutral site, obviously in Indy, instead of being in Columbus where this matchup was originally. We all saw how talented and how deep and the way that this Ohio State team operates. I know that Wisconsin is going to try and slow this game down. They're going to try and use Jonathan Taylor at times, Jack Cohn, to spread the field a little bit. Quintez Cephas, the wide receiver. But this is, I think, too talented, and they're operating at such a great level right now that Ohio State ends up winning the Big Ten championship.
SEC, LSU, and Georgia. You figure if Georgia wins, you probably see both those teams in the playoff. But it's a top five matchup in the SEC. Who you got?
This one is interesting. But it became less interesting when George Pickens, the wide receiver from Georgia, got into a fight against the Georgia Tech defender. He's their best receiver. Jake Fromm has looked to him all season long. He will not be available in the first half because he got in a fight. And that's just in garbage time, too. Yeah, in a rivalry game, that's going to happen. Emotions are going to happen. But that outcome doesn't have to happen. And you're at that point, you're putting yourself in front of your teammates, in front of the things that you have. So they're going to be without George Pickens for the first half. I think to begin with, it was going to be a hard task for Georgia to beat LSU. I don't think it happens without the output. They've struggled offensively. And if you look at their loss to South Carolina, they struggled to find receivers to throw the ball to, young receivers. The ball was in their hands and out, intercepted. You just can't have that. LSU right now is operating with Joe Burrow. Offensively, their output is amazing. Defensively, not the top echelon. They allow 23 or 24 points a game. I don't see them winning the national championship, but I do see them winning the SEC championship.
Out west, this is a Friday night game, Pac-12, Utah and Oregon. Kind of a shame Oregon lost a couple weeks ago, or this would have been the first Pac-12 championship that kind of felt like a play-in game for the college football playoff. Do you think the Utes make their case for that playoff spot?
I think they do, and we saw Oregon obviously lose to Arizona State, then struggle a little bit with Oregon State. I think they're reeling right now. One loss almost led into two losses, and Utah has everything in the world to play for. With Alabama losing last week, Georgia most likely losing in that SEC championship game, that opens up the door of that number four spot, and Utah will step right in. They have one of the better defenses in the country. They have one of the better offenses, which a lot of Michigan fans probably haven't seen because they're playing out west. They play, the Pac-12 at night. A lot of those games aren't on the viewing list, but this is a very good, very well-coached team.
Yeah, no doubt.
And I think Utah does win this game.
Speaking of that number four spot, the two teams in the Big 12 championship, Oklahoma and Baylor, also fighting for that crazy game in Waco. The first time they met, Baylor went up big. Oklahoma surged back. Who you got in this one?
I would love to see Baylor win this game. I just don't know that they can hang offensively. We saw them put up a bunch of points last week in their game, but
Kansas.
And the question I have for Oklahoma is in their last 4 to 5 games, their offense under Jalen Hurts, who is 80% of their offense, it disappears for half at a time. Against Kansas State, it was the second and third quarter. Against Iowa State, it was the third and fourth quarter. They just barely eked out a victory. But you can look to all of those games and say, where did the offense go? Baylor will force them into that. In the Baylor game, it was the same way. They were down 28-3 and then came roaring back. But they have that ability to come roaring back. CeeDee Lamb, one of the best wide receivers in the country. Jalen Hurts can do a lot of things well. I don't think he does anything extremely great, but I think they do enough to beat Baylor, and it keeps it. I don't think it really matters at this point unless Utah loses. Both of the Big 12 champ is going to be left out.
All right. In the ACC, Clemson and Virginia. I'm better off asking you, will Virginia be able to cover plus 29?
Well, how about this? Each team in the Coastal over the last, 6 years
has
won the Coastal.
Yep.
Virginia was the last one, and so they've completed they hit for the cycle. but it really doesn't matter because I think Clemson offensively, defensively, they're extremely good. And if you've seen Dabo Swinney at all in the last couple of weeks, he is on edge, you might say, mm-hmm. in regards to the respect that his team is getting. He is selling them that, and they are playing with the want to go out there, repeat as national title contenders, and gain that respect again. So I think Clemson comes away with a big victory over Virginia.
Yeah, and looking back at that, not only has it been different with the team on the other side every single year, but, I mean, gosh, Clemson's played in five of those games. So it's been Clemson versus insert random other team here for five of those six games. It's pretty crazy. Not a whole lot. I will say this for Clemson. They scheduled A&M. They didn't have three cupcakes in their, you know, they play South Carolina in their last game. So at least their non-conference is legit. But, I mean, we talk about the Big Ten West needing to, you know, bring some extra oomph to the league. The entire ACC, it's just brutal.
It is. And that's the fine line that Clemson walked all year. If they lost a game, they were going to be out just because they wouldn't have the resume. They didn't. They looked good in all of their victories except for maybe North Carolina, but they came away with a win. This is a good team.
No doubt. And the last one we'll pick, how about the Mid-American Conference? Fire up Chip, Central Michigan against Miami of Ohio. CMU was 1-11 last year. Jim McElwain, former Michigan assistant, going up there. Do you think the Chips win the MAC?
I would love to see them win the MAC just because, you know, Jim McElwain, obviously he was here last year. I got a chance to know him. He's a great football coach. We saw what he did down at Florida before he came to Ann Arbor. And this is a guy that knows the game of football well, can coach, develop talent. So I would love to see Jim McElwain. And I'm actually going to pick Central Michigan, Chips, in this game.
Very good. So number two in this fourth and short, if all that goes on, you kind of alluded to it, you think Utah would make it. What would your top four be if your predictions are right?
Well, it's, you know, the one thing that we have to say before I make my predictions, because my predictions are going to be the way of chalk. All right, and it's much like the NCAA tournament, the first two rounds last year where the higher seeds were winning. This is, I think, Ohio State goes in at 1, and they play Utah at 4. LSU goes in at 2, and they play Clemson at 3. I just don't see those teams losing, except for the fact that this is college football, and the unexpected should be the expected. So make sure you tune in because you never know what might happen.
We're overdue for some chaos on Championship Saturday. We really haven't had that much in the college football playoff era. It would be pretty cool to see this.
But
weekend.
How amazing is it that going into this football season, this has been one of the most exciting football seasons for me as a fan because going in, it was Clemson, Alabama, and everybody else. Mm-hmm. Alabama will not be in the college football playoffs. Clemson is going to go in as the number three team. We have an opportunity to finally have a different national champion, whether it's Ohio State, LSU, or Utah, or insert anybody else in that four spot. I think this is going to be wildly entertaining.
Yeah, I agree with that. Speaking of entertaining, number three, Greg Schiano to Rutgers. Give me your take.
The saga continues. And you know what? They did what they had to do. Greg Schiano had success there. I know that they were in the Big East at that time. This is the Big Ten. It's a different ball game now at Rutgers. But he is a guy that has relationships within the university and can get things done. He's got relationships with the high school coaches in the Jersey area. That's what it's going to take. Players is what it takes to turn around a program. Talent is what it takes to turn around a program. And with the transfer portal, that wasn't there as well when Greg Schiano was there. He can utilize that much like Lovie Smith did at Illinois, at Sonny Dykes did at SMU. You can see a turnaround. The difference being, you know, instead of, you know, watching, you know, Lovie Smith do it against the weaker side of the Big Ten West, he's going to have to do it against Michigan, yep. Ohio State, Michigan State, Penn State. It's a tough task, but if there's anybody that can bring him back to a few wins a year and maybe bowl eligibility, I think Greg Schiano is your best bet.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Lastly, we are into December. John, I'd like doing some lists with you. So last year we did a countdown of Christmas movies. How about this year, your top three favorite Christmas traditions?
Oh, well, I'll start with number three. And that we started this one over the Thanksgiving holiday. And anybody with kids that fully believe in the magic of Christmas know that there's the elf on the shelf. And for the month of December, since my kids were, could understand what was going on, it is the best behaved you will have young kids from Thanksgiving to December. Now, I will say this in regards to being a parent and moving that damn elf around. If you forget in the morning and your kids wake up, they're trying to find where the elf is, you better come up. You better think quick on your feet and come up with a good excuse as to why that elf didn't move. But that elf has eyes everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great tradition because, my daughters, two of them are old enough to understand the reality of Christmas. But my third daughter writes a letter to Snowflake, who is our elf, every day. Snowflake writes a letter back, signs, love you with her Snowflake insignia.
Okay.
So it's one of my favorite things, and I'll be sad when my kids no longer do the elf on the shelf. The elf on the shelf may stay there.
Yeah.
Just
sure.
Because why not?
We can hide an elf around the studio champions.
Yes, no. Then I wouldn't get any presents. Number two for me, and I know we'll get to your list here in a minute, Brian, but I'm going to go ahead and finish mine. Number two for me is the prime rib dinner. Thanksgiving has turkey. Easter has ham. But for Christmas, it's a prime rib dinner. Slow cooked in the oven to a nice, cool red center. The ends, maybe, some of those that want a baseball glove. We can cut those off and cook those a little bit more, but it is supposed to be cold. It is supposed to be juicy. You get a nice horseradish cream sauce to go with it, and I prefer the raw horseradish. Got to get a little bite to it.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing better than prime rib. And then that little strip on the outside that everybody knows is the little fatty part.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. And the seasoning, the rub on the, and everybody knows I'm a rub guy, all right? I love to rub my ribs. We've covered
good
that
clarification
topic already. Yes. Love to rub my ribs. Wish I could feel my own. But, that rub on the outside of a prime rib is just magnificent.
Sure.
And then the number one tradition that I love in the Jansen house is on Christmas Eve Day. We go somewhere where we can get some nice, tasty buffalo wings, spicy with some blue cheese, and we leave Santa Claus, because Santa Claus gets cookies from all the little kids.
Yeah.
And maybe a glass of milk, but at the Jansen house, he gets something special. He gets buffalo spicy chicken wings. He gets a side of blue cheese, and there may even be an adult beverage left for him.
Wow.
Just to enjoy the ride. Obviously, sober.
Correct. Don't give him to the reindeer.
Yeah. Mrs. Claus is driving at that point.
For me, real quick, number three, I love opening the stocking. Okay, presents are great, but as you get older, you don't need these big things. Like, it's nice you get a few little knickknacks, little snacks in the stocking. Uh-huh. I love this. My mom does a great job putting my stocking together every year. And even though I just turned 30, like, that's still it. Like, I love the stocking. Number two, all the food.
Yeah.
I love Christmas cookies. I love all Christmas desserts are money. Listen, Thanksgiving's the winner when it comes to the meat of the meal.
Mm-hmm.
But with Christmas, I can do that all the time. And number one is going to be my new tradition.
Oh.
Because I have a lot of family in the state of Ohio. And my tradition from here on out is to be giving them nice little maize and blue gifts every single year.
Well, send them a link to In the Trenches.
They're not going to be surprised because they're probably not listening to this. But we'll get them there.
Well, I appreciate everybody listening throughout the season, and we've got a lot more to bring you. I want to say thanks to Brian Bush for all the work that he did this year, obviously starting down in Winston-Salem, moving up in the middle of the season, and double duty at the end of the year with basketball and football. I also want to thank all of our guests, all the student-athletes, Dave Abloff, Chad Shepard for wrangling everybody and making this possible. But lots more to get to as we prepare for the bowl. I want to thank Matt Dudek for stopping by today to talk about the future of Michigan football. And we've got more to come as we prepare for the bowl game, as we prepare for the holidays and the offseason, all here on In the Trenches.
Thanks for listening to this week's edition of In the Trenches with John Jansen. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Michigan Sports Network.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.